Breaking news to begin NFL Live. Kyler Murray out for the season with a torn ACL that happened right there on that play last night in Monday Night Football. Unfortunate to see the tears, of course, as he was carted off of the field. And the worst that many feared is true. Dan Orlovsky, Ryan Clark here today. Lots to get to, but let's begin with this news. Dan, it's a December injury. Likely takes him out of all the offseason workouts, right? Totally. As we spin this thing forward. Puts the start of next season in jeopardy.
Sure.
How much does this affect Murray's growth?
I think it affects a ton, both with Kyler Murray and the organization. First off, hope he gets a healthy and a phenomenal recovery as the year goes on. But I think it's fair to say, what is Kyler Murray, or what kind of player will he be coming back from this? If we look at some of the other quarterbacks over the last maybe decade that have done the ACL, Carson Wentz is probably the one that is most similar. He tore the ACL in December 10th of 2007. Some could make the case that he was never the player that he was before that torn ACL. RG3 did it, I think, about 10 years ago in January. Could make the case that he was never the same player after that injury. Now, Joe Burrow did it November of 2020. He's obviously become the player that many expected him to be. Phillip Rivers did it at the end of his career. Deshaun Watson. So it's like 50-50 if they're ever the type of player they were beforehand. And then I think, what does it mean for Cliff Kingsbury? Because there's an obvious public disconnect between the player and the coach. And if you are going to move on from Cliff Kingsbury, if you're the Arizona Cardinals, that means the coach you're going to hire can't get any reps with Kyler Murray and this new offense all offseason. Does that minimize the pool of coaches that are going to sit there and say, I want that job?
At 2017 for Carson Wentz. You said 2007.
Sorry, yes, 2017.
Yep. What do you think? I think that piece of it, RC, is what I'm most interested in from you, the coaching situation with Cliff Kingsbury and the relationship with Kyler Murray, some of the issues he's had even publicly.
Well, they've had issues, and you also have to think of the commitment that the owners of the Arizona Cardinals have put into not only the GM and the head coach, but also Kyler Murray, all that one time. And it seems that, like, right now, all three of those people are tied together with the most important piece of that being Kyler Murray, not available for the offseason and the beginning of next season. The other thing that makes you wonder about the Cliff Kingsbury experiment is it wasn't working with Kyler Murray anyway.
Right?
That there's dissension, that there's discord, that we're not progressing as a team and as a quarterback and offense, that's an issue. Well, I think you have to move along from Cliff Kingsbury, but what coach wants to walk into the 2023 season without having Kyler Murray at the helm or without even knowing what type of synergy you'll have? Because Cliff Kingsbury, part of his pitch was, I can go get Kyler Murray. We have a relationship.
And we're going to have a superstar.
That was why they drafted him.
Right. Says, I have a relationship with him prior or previously, can't work with him. Why would I think I can as another coach, and especially not having an offseason to learn him?
It's a real thing.
We'll keep all of this in mind as we watch how this all plays out. And, of course, as Dan said well off the top, hoping for the best for Kyler Murray and his recovery. We'll get to the Patriots, who won Monday Night Football, a little bit later. But we're going to have a little fun here today, spend some time looking at the teams with the best chance at winning the AFC this January.
Let's go.
The Chiefs, Bills, Bengals, and Ravens, as you see, they're all poised to make a run to the Super Bowl. But if they fall short, well, what will be the reason? Well, let's take a deep dive into the biggest flaw for each team that could keep them from hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. Obviously, there are positives. We're just focusing on these flaws to educate everyone. As we showed you, the Chiefs, the favorite to win the AFC, much like recent seasons, their offense is the reason why. Kansas City leads the NFL in yards per game and third down conversion rate. We all wondered how Patrick Mahomes would adjust to the loss of Tyreek Hill. Well, all he's done is lead the league in QBR and passing touchdowns. He's been just fine. Tough to argue with those numbers, RC, but if the Chiefs don't make a deep playoff run, what'll be the reason?
It ain't him.
Right.
So let's just get that out of the way. And I remember I took a lot of heat last year because I was like, Patrick Mahomes is broken.
Yeah.
But I was like, things can be fixed. And now the Kansas City Chiefs fans still hate me. Well, he's fixed, guys. So it's not Patrick Mahomes.
Come on, Chiefs fans.
But you also have to think about what this team is defensively. It was that this team was good enough to get a stop when they needed it.
Sure.
They haven't been showing that throughout this year. And I think the prime example of that is the Cincinnati Bengal game. You go down, you attempt the field goal, and you aren't able to make it. You need to come out and get a stop and get the football back. And the Cincinnati Bengals are able to drive the ball down the field and salt the clock away. And also late in that game, especially in the second half, they were thoroughly outplayed. They were thoroughly out physical. And Steve Spagnuolo wouldn't change who he was.
Yeah.
When you look at the divisional playoff round last year with Josh Allen going back and forth with Patrick Mahomes, there is no quarterback that should be able to play on the level that Patrick Mahomes is playing at when he's playing at that level, but Josh Allen was able to do it.
Yeah.
And so when you think about this team, so young at the corner positions, a coach that doesn't necessarily change and loves to play, man, you're going to be attacked by some of the best offenses in this AFC come playoff
time. And those offenses, Cincinnati, Buffalo, if the Chargers get in, they don't match up against.
If Keenan Allen and Mike Williams make it, are healthy, and the Chargers make it in the playoffs, you know, this is the team you don't want to see if you're the Kansas City Chiefs.
Totally. And that, they've given up 28 touchdown passes. 15 of those are by rookie corners. Mm-hmm. So that all that man coverage, offensively, you sit there and go, we're going to just continue to take our shots. I agree with that, but I have a question about their offense. As great as it is, I want to see that in the biggest of moments and in the biggest of games where it's win or go home, that you'll actually put all those tight ends on the field and run the football. Because you didn't last year. I've seen you do it more this year than you've ever done with Pacheco. I've seen it. I actually watched it
juice too.
2 weeks ago against the Bengals. Will Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy stay disciplined of putting that 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, or 13 personnel, one back, three tight ends on the field? And let's live in this hypothetical world where they're down by five. And it's the AFC Championship game, and is 6 minutes to go in the game. Will you stay disciplined to run the football when teams like a Cincinnati Bengals are going to go, you ain't going to throw the ball against us? I've never seen Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy do that in those games, not in regular season games. In those games, I want to see if they will.
Okay, we will get to the rest of these AFC teams. We showed you contenders to make a run to the Super Bowl. But on to some horribly sad news in the football world. Mississippi State coach Mike Leach died Monday night at the age of 61 after complications related to a heart condition. Leach, who was in his third season with the Bulldogs, known for his quirky personality, dry wit, and prolific air raid offenses, he was 158-107 as a head coach over 21 years at Mississippi State, Texas Tech, and Washington State, where he was named the AFCA National Coach of the Year in 2018. This one hit the college football world really hard. And, Dan, you spent some time with him leading up to games you called. Yeah. What do you remember?
I called Jordan. I think it was Jordan Rogers. And going into the game, like production meeting, you always try to like connect with guys that have been with other coaches to see what they're like. And I remember calling Jordan and being like, what's he like? Because I had heard the rumors. And he was like, don't talk football with them.
Hmm.
My immediate brain was like, what are you talking about? He's like, don't talk football with them. Give them something off the football field or outside of football that you want to like have a conversation about. And I think I threw like, what's your favorite plot movie or something like that. And he went off for 10 minutes about, you know, some of his favorite movies that had really unique plots, and then we dove into football. But he was a guy that, like everyone has said today, just like very interested in so many things more than just football.
I think, first off, condolences to his family, also the Mississippi State family, and everywhere that Mike Leach has coached. Today is a reminder of what a brotherhood football is. I never played for Mike Leach. I never met Mike Leach. I've never worked with him. But I feel the sadness that we often feel when we lose someone that's a part of this game. The amount of young kids that he's given the opportunity to get educations, also learn football, and also the authenticity that he showed in just being himself. So hard to function in locker rooms and function in this game and be different. Mm-hmm. And he was able to be different and be so authentic in that that people embraced him, and he also embraced the people around him. And so to his family, again, I say that our thoughts and prayers will be with them. And Mississippi State and the football world lost a great ambassador to this game that says it doesn't matter the color, it doesn't matter the size, it doesn't matter where you come from, that if we're all putting our hand in the pile and we are willing to win, we can learn to be brothers and we can learn to be family. So it's truly sad to lose another one.
You know, covering the SEC like I do and have done for all these years, I remember how excited we were when he was coming to the SEC because we thought this is such an infusion of personality. And he was that and then some. And one of my favorite stories about Mike Leach was during the height of the pandemic, we started a show with our coordinating producer at SEC Network, Baron Miller, that was called No Off Season. And I hosted it sometimes from my car, sometimes in my house. I had a 5-month-old, 6-month-old baby. Reese was really young then. And I was doing it and kind of thinking, why am I doing this? I'm probably wasting my time. But I was looking for a purpose during the time and felt like I was kind of floundering in my career. And we were reaching out to so many different coaches to come on the show. And we finally got Mike Leach. And he was one of the first to respond back and said, yeah, sure, I'll do it. He did it from Key West. We talked about everything from hot sauce to his bike rides every day. And it just put a smile on your face. But one of the things that stuck with me so much from that interview is he was commending me for being a young mother who was also working at the same time. And it was a message that I really needed at the time. I'm not sure he even knew how badly I needed that. It stuck with me. I internalized it and it fueled me going forward. And I'm so incredibly thankful that he took the time to say that. He didn't have to do it. Mm-hmm. He's a family-minded man. And I think that was one of the things that really propelled him as a coach. We think about all the fun stuff that he did, but there was a lot more substance to it than I think just that. Either way, the college football world, a lot less colorful today.
Coach, I know you have strong thoughts on weddings. I'm in the middle of planning one right now. Do you have any advice for me?
Basically, every female in the family is going to terrorize you guys until it's over.
What's the best way to take your coffee?
Well, coffee tastes terrible anyway, so don't put anything in it to obstruct the harsh, bitter taste.
Well, first of all, there should be more sharks if you're by an ocean.
We're like one of the most constipated offenses on earth.
And there should be a lot more gorillas.
There's a reason they only serve mint juleps once a year, because they're awful.
I hope there's Bigfoot. I don't think there is.
It's like Woodstock, except everybody's got their clothes on.
I've told all my kids, I'll give you $10,000 extra if you elope. So far, they haven't done it, but I would, too.
Only Mike Leach could make all of us smile and laugh that way. Mike Leach gone way too soon. More NFL Live on the way.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
The Sunday NFL Countdown crew has you covered for Week 15 at 10 a.m. And then the Monday Night Countdown crew gets you set for Rams and Packers at 6 Eastern, both on ESPN and the app. Let's get back to Monday night from last night. And in this one, of course, we're going to see what Kyler Murray would do. It's kind of sad to see him smiling there as he gets it going early on in this one, Dan.
Chasing down,
except that was the injury. As we told you earlier, he tore his ACL. He's out for the season, of course. And we'll look to see how this goes for the upcoming season as well. So that means, as Kyler leaves the field, Colt McCoy will be entering. Third quarter is where we pick it up with Colt in the game. And, man, it felt like his teammates let him down at times in this one.
Yeah, this is the shot, or like the shallow cross, the hop, ball's a little loose, pops out, and then New England falls all over the football and walks it in for a touchdown. This was a 13-13 game with 20 minutes to play. Now New England has the advantage, 20-13.
All right, so there's New England, and then we're going to go there to McCoy chucking up the ball, and Marcus Jones says, I got this one.
They're trying to take a shot on second down to hop down the field. There's a little bit of a disconnect between the timing of it because of the pressure, easy interception, and then New England finishes it off. Physical run game last night down in the red zone was a good thing for the New England Patriot offense.
Patriots win 27-13, and of course, another one for Bill Belichick. So with that win, the Patriots move into the seventh and final wild card spot in the AFC. I know. Who was that? However, it's not all good news for New England, okay? According to ESPN Analytics, the Patriots had the hardest remaining schedule in the NFL. After visiting the Raiders this week, they finished the season with games against the Bengals, Dolphins, and Bills. That's not fun. As a result, the Pats only have a 29% chance to make the playoffs. So, Dan, if this Pats team, though, is going to hold on to a playoff spot, what's going to be the reason?
their red zone defense. Their defense is a good unit. I believe that their red zone defense is a very good unit. And I would tell you this, just from an offense's perspective, it's because they have this Rolodex of play calls. They'll get down in the red zone and they'll double one guy like DeAndre Hopkins. Then they'll double two guys. Oh, they'll play three over two in triangle coverage, or they'll play cover zero. And as an offensive play caller, a person in those situations, when the field is shrunk down, there's a little bit less space, everything happens real quickly, you better have a play call that is very much so built for like your fourth or fifth option to win. And it's just a guessing game. So that red zone defense, if they can continue to play that at a high level, they got a chance to hang on to that seventh spot.
Yeah, I'm just so not scared of this team, though.
I agree.
Right, yeah. When you think about what they have on the outside, it makes me really nervous because you don't have a quarterback that has the dynamic ability or explosive ability to play those skill players into huge plays, into explosive plays, 20, 30-yard pushes down the field. And now you don't have this creative experience play caller that can create mismatches or put you in route combos that make the defense have to make a decision. So they're in a conundrum of figuring out where to go. And now Mac Jones can use his anticipatory skills and his excellent ball placement to win. And so now how do you compete with these teams in the AFC? And I agree, they play a very good bend, don't break defense. And we've seen the pressure begin to amp up, and they've gotten more pressure out of guys like Uche. And now it's not all about Matthew Judon. But when I look at this team and I think about all the savages that they have to play offensively, I love what you do defensively in the red zone because it looks like a defensive guy is calling those plays. I hate what you do offensively because it looks like a defensive guy is calling those plays.
I think the simplification for their offense for me is like they have average players offensively that they demand elite execution from. And that's not fair.
The scheme isn't helping them out. And Mac Jones has the fourth worst QBR in the NFL this season. He's ahead of only Baker Mayfield, Carson Wentz, and Davis Mills. Ooh. Okay, back to our look at the teams with the best chance to win the AFC this year. And we turn our focus to the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, the Bills are not going to like this one.
Okay, well, buckle up then, Bills. The strength of the Bills, their balance on both sides of the ball. Buffalo, one of four teams in the NFL that ranks in the top 10 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. And they are the only AFC team that can make that claim. The Bills have the best point differential in the AFC by far, outscoring their opponents by more than 10 points per game. I just want to say, by the way, here, at least two of us, I can't remember about you, picked the Bills to be in the Super Bowl. Did you? No?
I think I did.
Okay, so we like the Bills, okay? Bills Mafia.
Our job is not to come on television anymore to tell you that you're good. Our job is to figure
tell you
out
what's going
to
happen here.
Flaw.
So
I'll tell you that
team,
you're good, too, if you're good, though.
Well, they are, right? But if a team is going to knock the Bills off, what's the reason?
So Dan did an amazing job yesterday of talking about how the Bills pretty much are in third and YOLO all the time. We were talking about it on Get Up, and he was just saying the inefficiency to just gain decent, consistent yards on first down is a problem for this team, but it's always okay because it's like Josh gets us out of it. Right. So to me, it's Ken Dorsey understanding that and Ken Dorsey coaching his quarterback out of avoiding the checkdowns, out of taking the easy throws, and also calling plays that takes that away from Josh. Sure. Give Josh some quicks. Let's throw some screens. Yeah. Let's use the run game. And even when the run game isn't giving you the explosive plays that you know you can get on the right shoulders of 17, consistently calling them, so now the offense stays consistent and the offense is balanced, but also the defense has to play it.
Yeah.
And now I know I can't go too high, or I can't go three deep, or I can't go two man and know that Josh Allen won't take the check down.
Yeah.
This is a team that has to understand, just because I can don't mean I have to. And if they can do that, I believe they're better in the playoffs.
When you said that on Get Up yesterday talking about Dorsey, and you were like, he's got to call the plays to make sure that those are like the situations that help him, I thought that was a huge point. But I believe it's a symptom of the disease. I think the disease is their offensive line is just not a very good unit.
Yep.
Specifically at the right tackle spot, no one on their offensive line has played to their capability. And the reason is this is all connected. First and 10, right? Josh Allen drops back and he breaks the pocket. Now he's got Stephon Diggs. There's an efficient throw right there, RC, right? For four, 5, 6 yards. And I sit there and go, take it. But then I watch this shot downfield. It's almost a touchdown. It's a foot away from being a big play. Now we go to second, then play action pass, and nothing's there. So great, throw the check down. Well, Josh is in that mode. We're like, I don't want to throw the check down. I got to get my 10 yards. I got to get my 12 yards. Well, it becomes a third down or a throwaway.
Right.
Now look what happens. third down. As great as Josh Allen is, this team is not built to play in third and long. And I think the Kansas City Chiefs are. I think the Cincinnati Bengals are. Mm-hmm. This team's not, because they can't protect. And it's all connected. And I very much so live on that line of, I want them to be more efficient. I want them to be a little bit more completion driven. But I don't want to lose the, you're a big play, splash play making quarterback. And I just think that's a really unique or difficult position to be in for their offense.
But also in that position, it's not saying be more completion driven as a detriment to your big play ability.
Yeah.
It's that in the moment, in the right situation, if it's first down, it's okay for me to get four.
Yeah.
Right? If it's third down, it's not.
It's, I know, so I gotta get to the situationally driven.
It's situationally driven, and we have to coach that and preach that throughout the week.
And when you're in the heat of the moment in those situations, making those decisions, I mean, that's difficult too, especially when you're Josh Allen and you know you're capable of it. Hey, coming up, we got something special. Todd McShay is in studio. I see him right over there. He's going to join us to discuss his very first mock draft. It's already time for this, guys. Hear who he has going where and why. There's a really interesting pick right around number 5 that we'll tell you about. We'll be right back on NFL Live. I'm so motivated.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Okay, so while the rest of us are getting ready for the holidays, Todd McShay has been prepping for mock draft season.
He goes draft with us. This man is always working.
This is his first mock. It's live on ESPN.com right now. You don't want to miss it, okay? But Todd's going to take us through the top 3 guys, starting with the Bears pick at number 3. Go ahead, Todd.
Yeah, Ryan Poles, the GM for the Bears, would be thrilled if this happens. If the best player in this draft is there at number 3, Will Anderson, you got to take him. Remember, you know, Khalil Mack is gone. Robert Quinn is gone. They sent them out of town. They only have 16 sacks, I think, on the season, worse in the league. Will Anderson comes in, 91 pressures the last 2 years. I mean, this guy is all just play after play after play. More sacks than he has games played the last 2 years. Then I had Jalen Carter going number 2 ahead of Anderson. Now, there are character issues, and that's going to be a topic that we talk about a lot. But Pete Carroll hasn't really been concerned about character issues in the past, and he's made it work. And I think from a talent perspective, he might be the best player. The last 3 games when he came back from the ankle injury, he was the best player in college football, offense or defense. This guy's an absolute stud in the interior. And then number 1, listen, Houston Texans need a quarterback. It's not if they'll take one, it's which one. I would go with Bryce Young at this point. He is undersized, and we can get into that. But my goodness, he's like a miniature Patrick Mahomes. the feel, the poise, under pressure, constantly just working around, creating beyond the initial play. And there's no one else, I think, in this class that does that. And I think he has a chance to be special if he can stay healthy, and that's an if that you can't predict.
More on Bryce Young in just moments, but let's look at the entire first round of the mock draft so you get a visual of it. Ohio State C.J. Stroud, the next quarterback off the board after Young, of course, going to the Lions with the 4th pick, which Detroit acquired from the Rams, remember, in the Matthew Stafford trade. You don't have to wait much longer for another QB to go off the board. The 6th pick, McShay has the Falcons taking Kentucky's Will Levis. That one's interesting. Mm-hmm. 5 picks later, it's another SEC QB, Florida's Anthony Richardson.
We're going to have a fun talking about this guy.
Going to the Panthers. Okay, so 4 quarterbacks in the top 11 with Alabama quarterback Bryce Young. The first one off the board. You heard what Todd just said there. Dan, you got concerns about Young?
No. I think he's the closest person to prime Aaron Rodgers that's come out to draft since prime Aaron Rodgers was prime Aaron Rodgers. His
last
feel,
year?
Yeah.
MVP. That's been a long time
legit,
ago.
I think his feel is so special. I think the game is incredibly slow for him. His ability to get in and out of trouble or get out of trouble and into great plays is rare. I will ask you this, though, Todd. Do you think that the NFL, because we have had two smaller quarterbacks get drafted in the last 4 or 5 years that haven't potentially, I guess, worked out. Baker's on his third team, and then Kyler has kind of plateaued as far as production or had until last night's injury. Yeah. Do you think that that might, like, scare the NFL away, saying the two guys that we did take that were smaller, they haven't necessarily taken off and worked out?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly could. And I know this. There are some teams that just will look at that and say, oh, 5'10 and a half, 195 pounds.
Don't care how good he
is. It doesn't meet our prototypes. Mm-hmm. Like, that just doesn't matter. So let's look at C.J. Stroud. Let's look at Will Levis and see which guy we like. Other teams are more open-minded.
Yeah.
But you said it, like, his poise and control, everything is so slow to him.
Yeah.
Nothing.
That's why he never panics with the football.
Yeah. Like,
never. It's Joe Burrow.
You got to find a way to protect him as much as you can and try to, you know, prevent him from running and taking a lot of hits. But I think he is different than anything else we've seen.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I haven't been impressed with a quarterback in a 2-year run in the history of my time watching SEC football.
Mm. Wow.
And I've seen a ton of them. And when you watch Bryce, the entire field looks slow to him. Think about the play he makes to win the game against Texas, where it's a day that he's not having a great day. He doesn't have these tremendous skill players we're used to seeing the Alabama Crimson Tide had, and he won that game by himself. Even when he was playing in LSU this year, within a team that I think LSU was the more talented team.
Yeah.
Bryce Young was the reason that they were still in the game, and also what they could do defensively. I know people are going to look at the size, and he has a smaller frame. I think that's the difference between Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and Bryce Young. But I will say this. You mentioned Patrick Mahomes, and I do think the arm angles, the accuracy, and all those things. But the type of poise he shows and the demeanor is very Jalen Hurts-like to me.
Yeah,
he is a true leader that is unflappable.
Well, and along those lines, he's going to impress the socks off of these teams in interviews. I don't think we can overstate that enough. Bryce Young is going to come in there. They're going to say, yeah, he's the real deal. Mm-hmm. All right, let's play a little game of Ask Todd, where each of us is going to get to ask him anything we want about his latest mock. You should have heard the questions that didn't make it. Anyway, right, Dan, you're up. What do you want to ask?
At number 7, the Colts.
Yeah.
Do they have any choice but to go up to get a quarterback?
No
matter who the head coach is, if it's Jeff Saturday, do they do an NFL retread? Do they sign a college coach? Like, that could be a team that goes after a coach from college. Do they have to go get a quarterback?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We've tried the veteran retread thing, and it's not working. And Chris Ballard, the GM, has done a good job putting a roster together. They just haven't had a quarterback to pull it all together. The order is going to change. The Texans, wherever they pick, it's most likely going to be at number 1. They're taking a quarterback. After that, you got the Seahawks, the Bears, definitely not taking a quarterback.
Right.
The Lions, we'll see. We'll see what they think now of Goff. But to me, if it's this order of Texans 1, Seahawks 2, Bears 3, you got to move up to one of those spots.
Yeah.
Because you also have Atlanta sitting there too.
Right.
In this order, one spot ahead of you. So you got to make sure you get up there ahead of probably Detroit at 4, but absolutely ahead of the Falcons at 6.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta's interesting. They just put Ritter in there to kind of see what he can do. We'll see what that looks like. But either way, they could be looking for a QB, to your point. All right, what do you have for Todd?
Well, Todd, we did a roundtable about the return to the run game. And part of that was me speaking. You have to return to the run game because these kids are taught the pass game throughout their entire high school careers with 7-on-7 and all of these different camps. You have a ton of cornerbacks going in the first round. Has this now become the sexy position to think that you can get a guy from the college ranks and plug and play him very early in the NFL?
Yeah, I think so. And it used to be totally different.
Like,
you know, corners would come in, you'd be worried, how long is it going to take them to adjust? I mean, look at Sauce Gardner, you know, Derek Stingley coming in. I mean, there isn't a Sauce or a Stingley in this class, I'll say that. But there are 6 guys that warrant consideration in the first round. And all of them, you know, various degrees, but all of them are ready. So many of them are long, like 6'2", 6'1", 6'2", long arms with the speed. So it's different. I think you're right. I think it's from growing up in the 7-on-7s and passing leagues and everything else. If you're not a receiver, you're a corner, but you're learning early.
And you know, the other thing that's changing, playing corner is becoming sexy.
Yes.
Though. It's getting to the point. No, well, guys.
Sauce is like, right. One of the coolest dudes in the
well,
league.
Well, that too, but guys are thinking, okay, I'm 6'2", I have a little wiggle, I can catch. But if I go play defense, now I'm different because everyone that's built like me has the skill set, plays on that side.
Good point. Right. You know, by the way, I agree with Anthony Richardson. I agree with it.
Wow. Okay, that we're going to get to like down the road, but that's going to be an incredibly polarizing conversation. Okay, notice you had a running back in the top five. Texas's Bijan Robinson to the Eagles. We've only seen one running back taken in the top 20 in the last five drafts. Is Bijan going to break that trend this year, you think?
Probably not.
Yeah. Eagles, I liked it.
Eagles fans deal with it. Like, why is everyone so mad? I gave you maybe the best player in college football at number five overall. I get it. You don't want to draft a running back at five, but why don't you listen to some reason for a second? 91 forced missed tackles this young man had at 220-plus pounds. Great pass protection, exceptional ball skills for a running back. And why wouldn't I take a rookie contract for a running back who's an upgrade over Miles Sanders, who I have to pay? Because he's a free agent now. So now I got to go pay him big bucks, but I can get a rookie contract for a fraction of that and dump all that money into the rest of my roster.
The other piece is we got an opportunity to interview him on a pivot.
Yeah.
Not just a good human.
Oh, no.
I mean, an excellent human will immediately upgrade your locker room. And I do believe in high school, he averages like 20 yards a carry.
That locker room is already so good, too. You
Arizona.
Add more to it. All right, by the way, there's a whole lot more mock drafts coming your way. We're just getting started when it comes to our draft coverage. My favorite time of the year. Thanks to Todd McShay for joining us here. Check out that mock on ESPN.com.
Let's go!
Yo, it's Tuesday. That means it's Touchscreen Tuesday. These boys are going to hit the touchscreen to tell you how teams might have figured out a way to clip Tua and the Fins. The guys are tapping in next.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Everybody's trying to figure out how all of a sudden Tua Tagovailoa doesn't have too much sauce. But we've seen a little trend the last couple of weeks that has shown why teams are playing better against one of the Miami Dolphins' staple plays.
All right, white boy question here. What's the best Jay-Z album of all time?
That would have to be the Blueprint.
All right, so four plays at home. I want Miami Dolphins fans to pay attention to this. I guarantee you Mike McDaniel is. So bottom of the screen, everyone pay attention. And we call that like a reduced slot, okay, where the condensed slot's going to happen. And you're going to get that 2x2 end up split. You're going to get this wrap in and off the ball right there.
Look at all this space. This is what Mike McDaniel is trying to create.
Yeah.
Because if you get this space, the speed get up the field, and now you can have Tua Tagovailoa, who is a great window thrower, find the space to throw it.
Exactly. So that's our first clip against the Detroit Lions. I want to attack the middle of the field.
Yep.
You saw that space that RC was talking about. You also saw the space in the middle of the field. Very similar look, right? There's that condensed slot. You're going to get that switch release again. Inside guy goes up, and then we're going to get Tyreek Hill down the sideline.
And once again, we have a bell corner here. Now we have a miscommunication between Hufanga and Charvarius Ward. And once again, Tua Tagovailoa with windows of space to throw the football.
And no one's near him defensively with all that room in the middle of the field. So I guarantee you Brandon Staley was like, we are not going to do that when we get those formations.
Yep.
Shout out to Ben Solak for all this stuff. Watch what the Chargers did on Sunday Night Football. There it comes again. There's that condensed slot formation up top. And what you're going to get is the off the ball, spray from inside and then outside release again.
Now also too, think about this. Here's what preparation does for you. We're gonna see Mike Jones up top. He's not gonna back off of the football because once he gets the motion, we're in man-to-man coming across. Watch the communication. They're gonna go inside out and now we're gonna switch that route so Jalen Waddle has to run right into Jones and we can be inside out on Tyreek Hill.
And that's the thing for me, RC, offensively, I'm watching the Dolphins play inside leverage, inside leverage. Yep. We showed those first two clips to show you that's exactly where the Dolphins want to attack. I want to ask you a question. Yep. I see that safety here playing that half of the field.
Right.
Why are they playing not only with that inside leverage, but also
because, high? Because what we're doing here now, right, we're trying to protect windows. We know that you're either going to get quicks, and if we don't get quicks, we're going to get a break 10 to 12. And getting that break 10 to 12, I'm in the perfect position, but he also cannot bend this route right now in between myself and the safety.
I love that. So there's that inside leverage that they played, the sticky coverage. Yep. That was earlier on in the game. Now I'm gonna go to a little bit of the third quarter. You're gonna get to see that same formation. I've showed you four plays that looked exactly the same, and this is what we're gonna get off the ball.
Also, what's the first thing that happened? We're gonna see Asante Samuel Jr. He's gonna move from 7 to 4 yards because they don't want the space on the outside in order to be able to fit these balls in.
So you're saying that Asante Samuel Jr. once started off right there, and then as that motion comes, he moves up on purpose to get that body close to him. This is what I see, RC, as they get off the ball. Look at that sticky coverage again. There's that inside leverage again where that safety's playing over the top. Mm-hmm. And then there's that inside leverage by both those defenders making sure that they cannot attack the middle field. Look at, I can't throw the ball in the middle of the field. Look at all that leverage that's getting played.
Also, we also have the leverage, but look at the awareness by the backside safety. Now this safety can be as high as he wants in case we get the sail route that comes here outside, but we have a safety pushing over the top to Jalen Waddle, also the sticky coverage inside here.
Man, so the Chargers defensively said, we are going to take away exactly what you want to do. I'm being dead honest. I think that is a blueprint that is repeatable by other teams. Mike McDaniel, I said this. I think you're a great coach. I want to see how great of a coach he is and the adjustments that he goes with rub routes and outbreaking routes out of those formations.
Tua Tagovailoa was on his way to being in the MVP conversation. Brandon Staley said, let's put a stop to that and show you that you can stop the Miami Dolphins. Now, the adjustment they make next will tell whether they get into the playoffs or they don't. So for right now, the Chargers had a little Tua much sauce.
Tua much sauce. You guys have Tua much
sauce.
Also,
it's like Jay-Z on the blueprint.
Hey, Reasonable Doubt is the best Jay-Z album.
Oh,
anyway,
I hear you.
Up next, back to our AFC exercise today. Dan is going to talk about the Ravens, the Bengals. One of these teams lacks everything, he says, when it comes to the passing game. More NFL Live on the way.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The annual NBA on Christmas Day tradition continues with five star-studded games on ESPN and ABC. Sixers-Knicks starts the day at noon Eastern. Then it's Lakers-Mavs, Bucks-Celtics, Grizzlies-Warriors, and Suns-Nuggets. Caps the night. Spend your holiday with us. Can't wait to have you there.
I'm just like Luka.
What? Okay, we continue our discussion on the top four teams in the AFC. So now we go to a pair of AFC North teams, beginning with Joe Burrow and the Bengals. Playoff games often decided in the fourth quarter, and that's when Joe Burrow has been at his best this season. You see it there. He leads the NFL in QBR in passing touchdowns in the fourth quarter of one-score games this season, which is when the score is within 8 points. As a result, Cincinnati has won four straight games in this scenario, including a win over the Chiefs a couple weeks ago. Man, this beat slaps. I love it. It's slapping. You just never know. Oh, we had to stop it, though. Okay, so RC, tell Bengals fans the one thing that could bite them down the stretch, like we've done with all these other AFC contenders.
Well, I'm going to tell you what.
If they don't get better at quarterback and number one receiver, it's not going to happen.
Like, I think when you look at this team, they have certainly improved on the offensive line.
Yeah.
But that is still something that's a source of worry for me. Now, this team has played a ton of those guys together. But when you look at the Tennessee Titans game in a divisional round last year, the way that the season finished off against the Los Angeles Rams, that offensive line immediately or eventually deteriorated throughout the playoffs. They have a new group. They replaced everybody but one player on that line. Can they continue to protect Joe Burrow in the way that they are, especially in critical football moments? Because if we look at when Joe Burrow starts to show his superpowers the most, it's during those times. If you keep him clean, you have an opportunity to bring a ring back to Cincinnati.
I would say this. This is the hardest team in the NFL for me to find a flaw in. Like an actual flaw in the whole NFL. But if you want to continue to zero blitz me, eventually someone has the opportunity to take advantage of it. And all they have to do is hit one or two.
Saw it twice with Patrick Mahomes.
Exactly. Completely flip a game. Mm. I mean, this is against Cleveland this past week. When all those defenders, RC knows this, are that deep and on the same level, we know zero's coming. 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9. Dude, you dump this off to a shallow cross. At worst, it's a one-on-one open field tackle. It could potentially go for a 70-plus yard touchdown, but Deshaun doesn't see it. This is a couple weeks ago against Tennessee, 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 9 again. There's that everybody on the same level, but 8-9 yards off the ball, sitting right at the sticks. You've got an outside leverage corner play off against an inside leverage or inside breaking route. If that ball's out just a blink sooner or out in front, that's a walk-in touchdown. Patrick's not going to miss that.
How much of it helps, though, that Lou Anarumo can give you a little dressing with that as well, where it seems to be that that's going to be the call, and now we're dropping out backers in the A-gap?
Totally. And I think once you get into those playoffs, if they're going to run that against, like, versus the Chargers or versus the Chiefs, it's a roll the dice sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, it's sometimes offensive. We sit there and go, you might win this one. But again, if I hit you once or twice, that completely can flip a game.
One word answer, team with the best chance to best the Bengals if it came down to it. Chiefs?
To beat the Bengals if it came down to it?
Chiefs.
Chiefs? Yeah, Chiefs. Still, I would agree.
I'd say the Baltimore Ravens.
Oh, interesting. Wow. So that leads right into that. Now to those Ravens, whose defense has taken it to another level since acquiring Roquan Smith. With Smith in the lineup, they've held teams to fewer than 3 yards per carry. That's the best rate in the NFL. They've also held opponents to the lowest third down conversion rate in the league. And only the 49ers have allowed fewer points per game during this stretch. You think about how we talk about the 49ers defense. Well, that Ravens defense is right up there with them. What is, though, RC, the single biggest issue facing the Ravens as we approach the playoffs?
They ain't got nobody to throw it to on the outside. When you look at this team, when they have the ability, at least recently, to push the ball down the field, it's DeSean Jackson. DeSean Jackson played with Ryan Clark, and DeSean Jackson was actually a veteran at that time. And I've been doing TV for 6 years.
Third person, Ryan Clark?
No, just Ryan Clark, the regular one.
Him.
The one that sits here and was playing there.
We know
and
him.
And so now they're not going to be able to add anybody on the outside. So what is this team going to do when you get into a position where Lamar Jackson or where whoever, if it's Tyler Huntley, has to throw the football in order for you to win? If you get behind, can you create enough dynamic and explosive plays in your pass game with the people you have? I don't necessarily believe they can, and that's why so much is dependent on Lamar Jackson, which is a very difficult place to be in the AFC.
I agree on the people. I'll take it a step further. Every good passing game in the NFL, X's and O's, I want people at home to understand this. You need spacing, timing, a reason, rhythm, connection, distribution. Everything's tied together. Ravens have none of that. None of that in their offensive pass game. And that's why you sit there and go, like, look at this up top. This is this past week with Huntley. Where is their spacing here, or reasoning, or connection, or distribution, or everything stuck together? There are 5 guys on one hash of the field to the sideline. There's way too many plays, not only in that game, but on a weekly basis that look like that. And so if I sit there and say, man, their defense is playing so good, and Dobbins back helped, and Lamar's going to help, their passing game schematically, X's and O's, is so fundamentally flawed. We just talked about Lou Anarumo. Right. You take all that away.
By the way, that was the problem last year, too.
Fan of their run game I is with Greg Roman, I'm the complete opposite in their passing.
I think another piece of it is when you look at the Baltimore Ravens in their run game, we can tell you what every guy specializes in.
Yeah.
Other than Mark Andrews, we don't know what those guys specialize
in. That's a good point.
They don't have a number one. We don't know that you're going to line up here and you're the guy that can push the football down the field, or you're a guy who we understand that if we get the football into your hands in the right space, we can get yards after the catch.
Yeah.
And so it's like they're moving people around, trying to find a chess piece that fits exactly where they need it in order to win. And until they get some sort of identity passing, and we usually say this about physicality.
Right.
They don't have a passing identity other than who Mark Andrews is.
And I think that's why we sometimes see Lamar get back and he just becomes jumpy and running around. And I'm like, I get it now. I understand why he does that.
What else are you going to do? And by the way, he can do that and still create out of it, which is only he can do. Okay, new on NFL Live. This just coming across as 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan saying he expects wide receiver Debo Samuel to return from his knee and ankle injuries in around three weeks. That's great, Dan.
Enormous.
Earlier than maybe we thought, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. This offense runs through everybody essentially but the quarterback. They run their offense through Debo. They run their offense through Kittle. They run their offense through McCaffrey. If he can come back and healthy in 3 weeks, oh, my goodness, that's everything. They are bona fide Super Bowl contenders still.
Remember also that maybe Jimmy Garoppolo comes back, but Brock Purdy's been playing so well.
You may not need him.
Sorry,
why
Jimmy
you need
G.
Why you need him?
Okay, time for one more thing before we go. We all love that Penei Sewell third down catch Sunday for the Lions. Dan Campbell was on Pat McAfee's show, explained he didn't exactly know what he agreed to in the moment.
These things happen during the game, but so we're in that situation, and the fans are doing the wave around the stadium. And so I'm just watching, and I hear Ben Johnson's like, "Hey, coach, you want to?" I'm so focused on the wave. And I said, "Yeah, that's fine." And I look up, and we're throwing it to Penei, and I'm like, "What the f- are we doing?" Johnson said it was fine. So, but it worked out great. It was unbelievable.
he had no clue they were doing that.
By the way, the wave is really distracting. It's just funny to hear a coach.
It is really distracting, but that only works if you're Dan Campbell.
Can you imagine if that was incomplete? He had no clue what was happening.
Well, if it's incomplete, you can't admit that.
Good for Dan to admit that, man. I love
that. Also, good for Penei Sewell catching that pass. You know what I mean?
It looks really athletic.
Did you see Mina's painting of it?
Oh, yeah, it's incredible. Check out Mina's painting. We'll see you tomorrow.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.